Good morning, my name's Paul Tolley. It is 10 o'clock on Friday. You're listening to Station 2 ARM FM, your local community radio station. And at this time on Fridays, we generally talk with a member of the Armidale community who has had an interesting life, done interesting things, has a story to tell. And I'm very delighted to welcome to the station this morning Cyril Green. Some of you may know him as the guitarist who played with Jimmy Little for many, many years. He's a member of our local community, but we're going to talk about that, but some other things as well. So very good morning to you, Cyril.
Same to you, Paul.
Lovely to have you here.
Yes, good to be here too.
I'd like to go back to the beginning. And right. You were born in Walker.
Yeah, I'm a Dangutty man from Walker. Lived there for all my life, just about. Because we used to do a lot of bushwork, you know, with Dad and around down there. When that all cut out back in the 50s, 60s, we had to look for work because there was none there. So with my brothers, we ended up getting a job on the railway. And, you know, from Walker to Walker Road, you had to get the bus from there out to the train. So you'd be playing on the bus, then you'd have to play in the train. we got a job on the railway, so that's why we moved to Armidale.
How old were you when you came to Armidale?
I was about 19 or 18 or 19, around that age. Yeah.
So those first years were spent in Walker. Was culture important to people in Walker at that time? Was it strong? How would you describe that?
It was strong, their culture. But our ancestors had this rules that if you didn't know or didn't go through them all, you had to be sort of keep away from things. And it was very important. Because I know things down there, you know, from the old culture, that my mum and dad said, you don't go near them if you don't go through the rules.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So through ceremony and learning and
show respect for them, you know, and you couldn't go, like I couldn't come to Armidale and try and take over Armidale because I'm a Walker guy. Yeah. Although Armidale had been really good to me, you know, the old town, it was a beautiful city, and I'm happy I'm living here.
Do you think that the attitude amongst First Nations people and Whitefellas has changed in recent years? I'm seeing a bit of a resurgence of interest and people claiming culture. Do you see that as well?
Yeah, it's a lot different now. It was hard years ago, but it is changing. But then again, there is still a bit of things that goes on, you know, that you don't expect it to be. But it's still a bit there, segregation, I think it is.
And people are still trying to, or are trying to reclaim language a lot, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're looking back because they're recognising that connection between language and country and people.
This is the trouble with years ago when we couldn't do these things, you know, we would get into trouble for doing that. And a lot of our language is lost because we never learned it to keep it going.
And you weren't allowed to, and kids were punished in school if they weren't speaking English, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So it was very, very difficult, but hopefully things are changing.
I feel it's changing. Because there's a lot of things back then we couldn't do, but today there's a lot of things we can do, you know. It's changing and it's getting better for us. Because I know, you know, with Jimmy, it was very hard for Aboriginal people to get a start in anything. And because Jimmy had the Royal Telephone, it was number one all around Australia, it made it a lot easier for him and his band to do the works, because all the clubs we played in back in the 60s, late 60s and 70s, there was hardly any out people, you know.
Well, we'll come back to that in a minute. He broke a lot of ground, and we'll talk about that, but I want to come back to you for a moment or two.
Right.
When did you first have a sense that music was important, and when did you get your first instrument?
Yeah, that's a long while ago. my mum and my dad and my brothers, My dad could play the accordion, and he was a fantastic accordion player. My mum could play it a bit, and all my brothers played guitar. So I sort of used to watch them and thinking, gee, I'd like to learn the guitar. So I kept watching where they were putting their fingers, and I was trying to put my fingers on the strings to say where they were. And I just got that, you know, that urge, I suppose you could say, to keep going with it. So I just kept practicing and doing the right things, and then it started to get a lot easier for me. Because you got to practice, it's just like anything else. But it got a lot easier for me, and then when we come to Armidale here, I decided I'd like to get a band going. An Aboriginal band, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had Maxie Kim, Kevin Kim, and Noli Polson, and Laurie Dodds, and myself. And we used to work around the club, the bowling club, was only a little small place down there. And they used to charge 5 shillings, I think it was, to go in when we'd play there.
And what was the band called?
We called it the Cyril Green Modern Five. I didn't want to call us the Modern Five, but they said, no, you will call it your name.
So obviously you were recognised as having some talent and skill if you were the name. So in a sense you were self-taught or learning with your brothers, but you didn't ever formally go out and take lessons.
No, I never took no lessons. Oh, I did go with George Goller years ago and...
Famous jazz. He was American originally, jazz guitarist who ended up based...
He told me he used to play saxophone.
Yeah, in America.
And then he changed over to guitar.
And worked with Don Burrows, who's much loved in Australia.
Yeah, they had a good group. And he was a fantastic guy, George Goller. I met him through Herbie Marx. I'd done tours with Herbie Marx, with Jimmy and his band, and... Herbie said to me, would you like to learn how to read music? And I said, oh, yeah, Herbie, it'd be good, but I'm used to playing by ear now. But I said to him, just for fun, would you teach me? Because Herbie was so busy, fantastic musician. He said, no, look, I'm sorry, but is there anyone else that you'd like to go to? And because I've seen George Goller play, I never met him. But I only just had a bit of a joke with Herbie. I said, oh, George Goller would be good. So, you know, we go out and tour. Next minute, we get a phone call at Jimmy's place in Sydney for me to go into the Wentworth Hotel to meet George Goller. And when I seen him, he said, I know all about you, Cyril. Can you come over to my place on Sunday? So I went over. Only 2 weeks I went for him. Went on that Sunday and then the following Sunday because he was so busy and I was so busy. So we was sort of not clashing together. When I was in Sydney, he'd be out. When he was in Sydney, I'd be out on the road. So we had to sort of give it away for a while.
And you played different styles of music, but you both played the same instrument.
Yeah.
And his chord structures were very jazz-oriented, weren't they?
Fantastic he was, yeah.
So how old would you have been when you got your first guitar, do you reckon?
Probably about... 7 or 8, I think.
Mm. Yeah. Was that exciting?
Oh, yeah. But it was a terrible hard guitar to play because the strings were so high. It was so hard to press down.
You still had the young 7-year-old hands,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, that's right. A little hand trying to press down the string.
And if you had the old one with the thick neck, that made it
harder again.
But so did you ever have an interest? I mean, was it just guitar or did you listen to the lead guitarists or were you listening to the rhythm guitarists? I mean, a lot of people are curious because they say, but why is Keith Richards such a good guitarist? Because they don't see him doing the Eric Clapton of thing with the fast, fancy runs, but he's such a wonderful, solid rhythm guitarist. Were you starting to get a sense of the different styles of guitar?
Yeah, well, that's what we had to do, is try to learn all different strums and styles of playing the guitar, because... Jimmy was a ballad singer, he was like a rock singer, and he'd sing all these different songs. So for me, learning just the three chords, three F, C and G or G, C and D.
Mm-hmm.
It was so hard. I knew some minors, you know, A minor or D minor. But when I went to Sydney and with Jimmy, with the songs he was singing, I had to learn diminished chords. I had to learn augmented chords. And I've never heard of these chords before, you know. So I had to really study and practice those chords to fit in the songs that Jimmy was singing.
So we'll go to where you're in guitar, you're in Armidale, you're playing guitar in your own group.
Yeah.
How did you meet Jimmy, and how did Jimmy move from being a player in a band in Armidale to working with Jimmy Little and being based in Sydney? How did that come about?
It's amazing, mate. I still pinch myself to think a little Aboriginal boy from Walker, a Dangari kid, that ended up with one of the top entertainers in Australia. When I got the band going, I had a guy here called Barry. Oh, geez, getting long ago now. Paul, I can't think of his name, but he sent a tape from me down to Jimmy.
Really? Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew. Yeah. He asked me about it. Sent it down there, and Jimmy heard it. He told me after, you know, he said we get a lot of tapes and people playing guitar, singing and all that. And he heard me, and then one night he come through here, and he come to where we were playing here. I don't know if it's his town hall at the bowling club, but he come and he said to me, I'm starting a band up. Would you be interested in coming to Sydney? I said, oh, yeah, I'm only a young kid, young
fella. What was that like?
Yeah, I had to pinch myself, and I might be dreaming. But he was a nice guy, Jimmy. So I was working on the council here then, and then I ended up going to Sydney, and is history after that, mate. I just fit in with his band, and we travelled Australia just about all over the place, you know, and worked with all different artists. It was fantastic.
And at some stage, you met Hazel.
Yeah, met Hazel.
Who was to become your wife and
that's right. Yeah.
Have children together in the
children.
Family.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah, it was... we're going back a long way now, mate, but we have sons. I got Tony. Tony plays bass, he's a good guitarist too. And Anthony, my grandson. Tony's my son, and Anthony's my grandson. They play for Terra Firma. And Cyril and Kevin were in the police. They were two coppers. And Dave was at the university I think about 30-something years, I think.
But you two met in Armidale, did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we met in Armidale, yeah. And we got a daughter, Marlene, and she works for a legal service.
So you've met Jimmy, you've moved to Sydney.
Yeah.
Jimmy's career is starting to take off because people can see that he has a presence on stage. They can see that there's a talent here. As you said earlier, it was a time when it was very difficult for Aboriginal artists to make it. What happened? What was it about Jimmy that allowed him or enabled him to break through in a way that other Aboriginal artists hadn't?
Yeah, it's I just can't seem to... I know that, you know, he's a good fella. He was a fantastic fella. But he had a good voice and I think Royal Telephone.
It was the song
that put him to number one. Because it was big all over Australia. And it made it a lot easier with a name like Jimmy Little then for us to do the clubs. People, you know, everywhere he played was just booked out.
And for people that don't know, Royal Telephone's a gospel song.
It's a gospel song, yeah. Because his wife, Margie, said to me, if Jimmy didn't take up singing, he was thinking about being a priest. Because he goes to the Church of Christ. Yeah.
So the career's taking off, as you say. It's a hit all around Australia, you know, King of Pop, that sort of thing. Again, it was unheard of for an Aboriginal man to get those sorts of accolades and awards, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He was the first. He really did break ground.
Yeah, well, he's got gold records, silver baton, conductor's baton.
So you started touring. Mm-hmm. You even... And you and I were talking about this. At one stage, you even got to go up to Darwin in the days when the road from Port Augusta up to Darwin was just a goat track. Were you mostly travelling in vehicles?
Yeah, we'd driven up there in cars and had 2 weeks up in Darwin and come back to Alice Springs, and we'd done all the settlements around there.
Which is what Slim Dusty was doing. He was the only other one that was doing that, wasn't he?
That's
really?
Right, yeah. Mm. Yeah, Slim used to do all that. And it was really amazing because what surprised us, you know, we haven't heard our language spoken by our people. But in Darwin, that's what they do. They talk the language all the time up there. It was amazing. We couldn't help thinking about it. You know, listen to our people talking their own language. It was really amazing for us.
And English is a second or third language for a lot of people
exactly.
up there, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
What was the welcome like when you went into, you know, more remote areas of New South Wales, WA, South Australia, Northern Territory with an Aboriginal band? Did you get a wonderful welcome?
Yeah, we did. We were really welcomed by everyone there, you know. It was fantastic. But everywhere where Jimmy went, you know, he was the same. People was just so happy to meet him or talk to him, and he was a really gentleman, you know. He'd pick people up when we'd travel between towns and give them a ride to the next town where we perform and give them money too.
He's a big star.
Yeah, well, and say to him, you know, you might need this to buy something, so you give him money.
And that's what I had heard, that along with being a wonderful singer and artist, he was also a good person.
Yeah,
very good
he
person.
Was. He never forgot who he was. You know, he was an Aboriginal Yorta Yorta man from down south coast there. And he never forgot that. In his songs, on his performance, he used to sing Black Tracker, Give a Coloured Lad a Chance, and Yorta Yorta Man, and you know, all these songs that he'd written, and you know, it used to go so well. So he never ever give up on his people. He just tried to make it better for everyone that come after him.
In a way, I don't know if they knew each other or not, but in a way, he also paved the way for people like Uncle Archie Roach, didn't he?
Yeah, well, all those guys, Archie and Emma Donovan. And
Coloured, and yeah. Out with Coloured Stone and No Fixed Address.
See, even Troy, when Troy was starting, Jimmy got him up in Tamworth at the Country Music Centre to sing a song on his show. And that's the sort of guy Jimmy was. If he knew anyone, it didn't have to be Aboriginal people, they were white people or Aboriginal people, he knew them, that they could sing, he'd ask them to get up and sing a song.
I'm talking with Cyril Green, born in Walker, long-time Armidale resident, who played guitar in Jimmy Little's band for many, many years. How long were you working with him, Cyril?
Well, it'd be over 50 years easily, because I joined him way back in, I think, 62, I think it was, 1962. It was just after Royal Telephone, which made it all the better for us, you know.
And he needed a live band, obviously, to capitalise on that.
Yeah, he wanted to get his own band. He had a band before that with the bass and guitar and piano, I think it was. But I don't know what happened there, but he wanted to get an Aboriginal band, and that's, he got his Aboriginal band to tour Australia.
And obviously you got on well. I mean, and I'm sure you had other offers and other proposals come your way, but to work with someone for over 50 years speaks to me anyway of not only a musical relationship but a personal relationship and a pretty good relationship.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jim was so good, you know. It was fantastic to work with him.
Was the band very stable? I mean, a lot of bands have turnover, the classic personality and musical differences and all of that. Was his group pretty stable?
Yeah, they were pretty good. Like, I think me and Doug, the drummer, we sort of kept with him all the time because our bass players, Paul, I don't know what happened, but they kept getting sick, and we lost Neville Thorne, our bass player, and then we had Jimmy Martin, I think it was. We had a lot of different players, and we ended up with Nelson, and then he passed away. Oh, that's nearly the end of Jimmy's career when he passed away. But we all stayed together, you know, and a lot of times I'd just go with Jimmy to just me and him and lead the bands and that.
Where did you like playing? Where were the places you enjoyed? Think about the highlights or the gigs that you really did enjoy.
Yeah, we loved going everywhere, you know, because the people respected us and showed us that. Like, we've played in the Opera House 6 times. I've done a double album in there. We've worked at Checkers nightclubs where they got all the American entertainers over.
All the top ones, yes. Gene Pitney and Chubby Checker and people like that would regularly
and
come
Dean
out and play.
Martin.
Dean Martin would play Checkers.
Yeah. And Brisbane Festival, we used to do the...
Tamworth.
We'd done Tamworth for a long time down there. And we used to do the country club in Brisbane and the Land Office Hotel and they had a nightclub there called D Brazil. I don't know if it's still going, but these guys, you know, they're all the bands and people that we met and worked with were just absolutely wonderful.
And Tamworth was important because being not just a single gig but spread over the week, it was a real opportunity, as I'm told by people who play there. It was an opportunity for people to get together and play together and share stories. And it had a different feel in that respect, didn't it?
That's right, yes. A lot of our entertainers now, this number one, has sort of started off with Tamworth, you know, busking in the street down there, and it gives them that lift to go on.
So you look back now, I guess, at your age on the career. Do you pick out any moments which were real highlights for you? Or I mean, one of them you said was just the fact that Jimmy offered you the job in the band.
That's right.
But once you're in the band, and I guess seeing your brothers play, going back before that, seeing your brothers play guitar and in some way having this idea, I'd like to do that, and maybe I could do it. So you're in the band now. Can you pick out any? Yeah. And you mentioned the Opera House. Were there any real highlights or really any moments when you look back that are important?
I think the Checkers nightclub in Sydney. It is one of the amazing clubs that I've ever played in because you'd set up behind the curtain, and when you'd start playing, like the stage would go out to the people. It was amazing because you wasn't away back from them. You were going out to them.
You're in the...
Yeah.
And the Checkers audience was a reasonably educated audience about music. They knew whether what they were hearing was good or bad. They knew what they were hearing, didn't they?
Exactly. Like Norm Erskine was one of the big guys there at Checkers. He said... when you go out there, Jim, ever look, he said. I don't know why they get the overseas artists to fill it. And we done 5 shows in there. And it just packed every time.
It was a different era, too. It was quite glamorous. I mean, people these days go out T-shirt and jeans to hear music, but the clubs like at that era in Sydney with the clubs like Checkers, the Mandarin Club, I think was another.
Yeah, Mandarin Club, we done that too.
They would dress up. It was an event, wasn't it?
It was fantastic. You had to have tuxedos on to go and play. Mm-hmm. They even had them dressed up in the toilets with tuxedos on. So it's amazing it was. I still sit down and think about it, you know, what I've done with music, or what music has done for me, and my God, I like to praise my God up because I think I wouldn't have got anywhere without him. But giving me the knowledge and to know what I had to do, it sort of helped me a lot.
I'm sure I'd be continuing to work on the railways.
That was a terrible, heavy job. We had to lift rails and sleepers and strip metal and all that stuff. And, God, it was everything you picked up on the railway was heavy. Yeah. You know, it was just terrible. When I got with Jimmy, well, God.
You had to look after the hands and the fingers,
change the air, get them all softened up and loosened up to play the guitar.
So you're no longer a young man, although you sound like you still are.
Yeah.
These days, do you still pick the guitar up? Do you still play around Armidale or Walker or
any of the guitars? Yeah, I still play. I travel around from, say, Gaia to the... I just do the nursing homes now. Mostly volatile stuff. They just give me petrol money, you know.
And morning tea, maybe.
Yeah, a cup of tea.
Yeah.
But it's lovely to go and play for them because they probably were in our audience, you know, when they were younger. And they just love the old music that I play. I go to Gaia and Urella and Walker. I used to go up to Glen Innes. I'd had at Bundara, but since the COVID come, it's sort of knocked a lot of things around. Mm. And besides, I do a lot of playing in the church. I used to, for funerals and stuff. I'd go to Sydney and Coffs Harbour and Newcastle and all over the place.
Do you still get the same joy playing that you did 50 years ago?
You do, yeah. You're not as good and quick as you were then, but you still enjoy it, you know. It relaxes you.
And let it into a relationship with the audience and the listeners?
Exactly, yeah. Some of the songs, the old songs that they know, they just, you know, start singing or tapping their foot. It just brings back memories to them, I think. Yeah.
It's interesting when you talked about not as fast or as quick as you were, because I spoke to someone quite a while ago and they were talking, they used an analogy. They said, you look at some of the footballers and the rugby league players, when they get older, they're not as quick and they're not as fast as they used to be, but they're smarter and they know how to play the game between their ears. And I think it might be the same with musicians as well. You're not as quick or as fast, but you know the tricks.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that right for you?
That's what it is, yeah. You know what you got to do. It takes a long time to go from the brain down to the fingers, but it gets there, you know. You're spot on there. That's right.
Look, it's been really lovely talking with you, Cyril. It's such a pleasure and a privilege to have you come into the studio and talk with us. And before we started, we talked about finishing up with one of your pieces of music. And the one you chose for us was a song that was very associated with Jimmy Little.
With Jimmy. It's all about Jimmy, where he grew up and his people down there. It's called the Yorta Yorta Man.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We'll go to it now.